What's up, you little weekly call-buying, every-tick-watching degenerates? How the hell's everybody doing? This is the QTR Podcast. Today's April 2nd, 2019. First and foremost, my Patreons are the people that keep this podcast going. They're the capitalistic engine behind the podcast. They keep me motivated to keep my ass in this chair and talking shit like I'm about to do right now. But first and foremost, I want to shout out my friends at Quantamize.com. They are a huge patron supporter of the podcast, Quantamize. Appreciate the shit out of those guys. There's a free trial link to their service in my podcast description. They have a platform that covers over 10,000 stocks, options, cryptos, and they've recently been rated number one alternative to the Bloomberg Terminal by Benzinga. So check out my friends over at Quantamize.com. Also want to shout out my friends at Corvus Gold, my buddy Nathan Michaud at Investors Underground, Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, Russ Valenti, Piggly Wiggly, and the usual group of degenerates that are coming through and helping me out. And I also want to thank some of my newest patrons, guys like Art Sporl, Justin, Bertha Moreno actually just checked in like 2 days ago. I appreciate you. Peter Schwartz, Colin Hicks, Rob Sittig, Fire Bruce Allen's in the house. Oh, didn't turn these fucking speakers off again. This computer just does whatever the fuck it wants, folks. It does. You know, it just restarts whenever it wants. It sends me messages. Shit just pops up all over the place. I literally walked in the other day. It was like, your computer is going to restart in 15 minutes and there's nothing you can do about it. Would you like to restart now or sit here and wait the 15 minutes? And I spent like 10 minutes looking for the button that was, how do I get out of this? Usually used to be able to click out of those things or, you know, check a thing that said, remind me never again. But that was it. It was 15 minutes or go fuck yourself from my computer. And so I just picked go fuck yourself. I just shut the thing off and then went and did something else and let it restart because that takes, you know, another half hour on its own. Point is, some days it feels like technology is devolving and getting the best out of me, and that was one of them. Back to the patrons. If your name is Walter Berkowitz, I appreciate the shit out of you. P-Dog, Toy Pam, David Spots, Dale Short, Sam Masters, I see all you guys, and let's just throw it back to a couple of older school patrons while I'm on the line. Guys like Peter Roselle, what's going on, my brother? People like, how about Harrison? You still in the house, Harrison? Joined up on February 5th, I appreciate you, my friend. Ned DeLorme is still in the house. Chris Sharkey is still in the house. How about Chris Bunting? How about really the real Elon Musk, who I know is not the real Elon Musk, still checking in. Interstellar Ginger Beer's in the house. Trinker is in the house. What's going on? My homie Jim Tilton, Jem Ross, Nick Sutton, Scott Beck. How about Kenneth Sprawl is still in the house. Torch Basketball is still with me. Bunch of you guys got declined here, I see, for your... Hey, I know that feeling. I got declined to buy a Slurpee when I was in college in front of my girlfriend. I'll never forget that. I went to 7-Eleven. Nice little non-alcohol related date. Like, hey, let's go out. We'll go out for a walk. We'll do something romantic. Hey, there's a 7-Eleven. Let's stop for Slurpees. Total was like $3.75. Declined. Very embarrassing. My girlfriend then had to buy the Slurpees. All right, I'm just kidding. That was actually last week, folks. Anyways, I want to shout out Doug Christensen. I want to shout out Colin Turner, Bill Lane. I still see you guys. All right? I still see all you guys. Kevin, my buddy Bubble Boy, my friend Guy Loopy. And now we're throwing it back to 2018. Some of the old school patrons, Tom Wysocki, Michael Embley, Aiden Archer, Robert Micello, Robert Nogler, Ethan Watkins, I appreciate you. Okay. With that being said, there's two other things on the menu that I got to get to. The first is that I'm not a registered investment advisor, and this is not investment advice. I hold no licenses, no registrations, etc., etc. If you take this for advice, folks, I can't be held responsible for what happens to you, all right? There used to be a thing called personal responsibility. It doesn't seem to exist anymore in today's society. Now everybody feels like the government has to take care of them. But if you fuck up, and you fuck up based on my advice, it's not my fault because it wasn't advice to begin with. I just threw you a little trick there. And the government is not going to bail you out, okay? The government reserves their bailouts for multi-billion dollar corporations and money-losing alternative energy projects, things of that nature. They're not going to bail you out. They're not going to bail your hot dog stand out. As far as you're concerned, you can go fuck yourself. Love the government. All right, next. I recommend a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. People email me all the time. Chris, is 3 okay? Chris, is 4 okay? Chris, is Zambuca okay? Folks, I want you to put your own spin on the shit, all right? Maybe 2 is not the right number for you. Maybe you're a degenerate. Maybe you're 65 years old and you've been drinking 15 Miller Lights a day since you've been 18 years old. At that point, I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to go ahead and say you might need 3 drink minimum to, you know, get your gears going. Now, of course, I'm not advocating alcoholism, but on the other hand, I am a libertarian. So if you're already an alcoholic before you started listening to this podcast, who am I to tell you what you should and should not be doing? The point of the matter is, folks, we're all here to enjoy ourselves, and this is a podcast about the Lyft IPO. I went back and listened to my critically acclaimed podcast about Spotify, which was the last IPO that I did a podcast on, and that podcast was entitled Spotify, You're Not Getting In Early, You're Holding Someone Else's Bag of Shit. And that was a critically acclaimed podcast, and of course, by that, I mean not critically acclaimed. And I went to listen to myself because I wanted to put that out there and say, hey, here's what I think about IPOs. But I really didn't do a good job of conveying how fucking annoyed I am with IPOs. So I figured I would record an extra ornery podcast today with additional snark peppered in to let people know what I really think about the initial public offering process and the way that IPOs, specifically Lyft's IPO, but also IPOs like Spotify and Alibaba, are then taken from the spot where they are arguably at their most stretched valuation possible, and then stuffed mercilessly down the throat, up the nose, in the ears, and up the ass of every retail investor that's watching television. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But first and foremost, why do I want to talk about the Lyft IPO, right? It's everywhere right now, all right? So it's been on CNBC nonstop for the last 3-4 fucking days, whatever it is, and as you may or may not have noticed, ladies and gentlemen, when you're on the inside of an IPO, whether you're the bank that's underwriting the IPO or you're one of the early investors in the company that's IPOing, the only thing that you should be thinking of and the only thing that these fucks are thinking of is get it out there and get the price as high as humanly possible. And I'll explain why in a second, okay? And the method of getting this information to the retail public and those that are kind of watching the IPO goes something like this. About a week before the IPO, they start talking about it. The first thing that happens is a headline crosses CNBC or somewhere else, maybe a year before the IPO, and it says, Lyft is looking to file documents with the Security and Exchange Commission for an initial public offering. And then fucking everybody shuts up about it for a while. And then a year goes by or 6 months goes by or whatever. And you see that they've actually filed the documents with the SEC necessary for an IPO. And then about a week after that, right as they're getting ready to IPO, you start to see the pricing range. Okay, well, Lyft is looking at an IPO in the range of $55 to $60 a share, or $60 to $65 a share. Then leading up to the actual day where it's going to trade, what happens is 9 times out of 10, the price that the IPO is set to open at or be offered at generally gets bumped up based on, you know, what they call oversubscription of demand, or any of number of factors. But generally, as the media starts to create a hype about an IPO and the IPO nears its offering, oftentimes you see its price indicated higher than what it is supposed to IPO at. So I think Lyft's actual initial public offering was 72. And leading up to the day of the offering, what you see are all these headlines like Lyft expected to IPO at higher end of range, upper end of range, And it's supposed to create this buzz. And people that don't know much about the market, aka, you know, guys like me 10, 15 years ago, I mean, I still don't know much, but when you really don't have a fucking clue what an IPO is, and you keep seeing the newswire being bludgeoned with headlines that this is indicated to open at the high end of its range, and then it's going to gap up from there, all you can think of is, wow, this must be a great fucking stock. Everybody's in there trying to get it. And really, what I think it is it's a consequence of the IPO continually being pushed in the media. The more popular an IPO, the more, and I mean popularity in terms of how it's disseminated to the public, the more likely it is to be bid up when it first opens, right? And leading up to the open, the more leeway you're giving to the initial investors, to the company founders, to the underwriters, to fluff the price up, the more impressive the IPO is going to look. So you start seeing these stupid fucking headlines before an IPO, like, oh, Lyft is indicated to be going public at the higher end of its range. And it's like, of course it is. Because let's look at what fucking happens leading it up to an IPO, right? You have a company, and you start your little company, Lyft, when it was a one-employee company, and it takes on a Series A round of financing, and then it takes on a Series B round of financing, and a Series C round of financing. And as new financiers come in, the company is supposed to grow. So as a Series A financier makes his investment, the next round at Series B is supposed to value the company higher than the Series A investor. And ostensibly, what is supposed to happen is everybody on the investment food chain of a private company with each round of financing is arguably supposed to, I mean, in an ideal world, this doesn't always happen, but the ideal scenario is every round that comes in, the valuation of the company should be higher than the previous round. This means that the early investors make the most money. It's just like a stock. If a stock's going to go to 100, the guys that got in at 1 are going to make 100 times their money, and the guys that got in at 50 are only going to make double their money, right? So if you look at it in that respect, the guys that come in from the Series A generally make the most money, or, you know, the startup, the seed capital, even prior to the Series A. And as you run through the rest of these series and you dish out more and more equity in the company and the valuation of the company gets higher and higher, so it then takes less and less equity to raise more and more capital in an ideal scenario, all you're doing is giving these people smaller stakes of the company at a higher valuation as you move forward, right? All of those people, plus the people that are eventually tasked with underwriting the IPO, the bankers, the investment banks that are going to collect fees on the IPO, people that own it, the private equity companies, all of these, you know, angel investors, people that came in and all have stakes of this company that are preparing to go public, their goal as an early stage investor is to get the fuck out on the IPO, okay? So this is how you have to start looking at initial public offerings, right? And this is what I said in my Spotify IPO. You're not fucking getting in early with an IPO. Yes, you know, there's all these statistics. I was like, if you had bought Google without David's initial public offering, you would be up 15,000%. Yes, there are exceptions to the norm. But every company IPOs, and when you think about how many shit, horseshit, bankrupt, bullshit companies wind up going to zero or wind up on the OTC or wind up with delisting notices, you know, at some point, you have to start to realize that an IPO isn't necessarily a pass for a great investment. An IPO is not necessarily, hey, this is going to be a great investment. We know you use Lyft. We know you know the company. Ostensibly, in your brain, you're thinking, man, this is going to be a great investment because I use Lyft every day, right? And so the first shot that I get to buy it on the public market, why the fuck wouldn't I go in and buy it? But what you have to remember is that everybody that's invested into this company before it's gone public, their entire thought process is get the valuation as high as possible and then dump as much equity onto retail shareholders and people that, you know, the public market. So when you go public instead of being a private company, you have access to an immense amount of liquidity, trillions of dollars of liquidity that you wouldn't have as a private company. Now, not all of that liquidity is going to pour into your company, but it's opening up your company for a wide range of investments and a wide range of investors that were not there prior to going public. So when you're an early stage investor, what you're looking for is in the IPO preparation leading up to the offering, you want the company's financials and the company's metrics to look as good as humanly possible. You want to hand those documents that have to be filed with the SEC that show your first set of financials and all of your company metrics. What you're going to do is pick and choose the best things and point them out. All these operating metrics that may not necessarily be the standard in your industry, or if you're like Lyft, which is a relatively new industry, kind of ride sharing, you're going to point out all these things that you think are immense positives, and you want to highlight those things, right? You want to get those out there and get them into the initial prospectus so that new investors coming in say, wow, well, they are growing their number of fucking license plates owned, or they are growing the number of bagels in the break room, or whatever they go to pick, right? You want to be able to show them a chart with a smaller bar on the left and a larger bar on the right, and it doesn't even matter what it's fucking titled. People are impressed. They see the chart going up. They're like, oh, well, the amount of orange juice on staff is really increasing. I feel like this would be a good investment. So as these IPOs are being prepared to be dumped onto the public, and I did refer to them, in fact, as flaming bags of shit at one point. They're not all flaming bags of shit, but a lot of them are. And I do think that people need to look at these things from the other angle than the angle than they're handed to the public with by the financial media, which is everything's perfect, and if you disagree, you can go fuck yourself. You have to know that these early stage investors and the investment banks and all of the middle stage and later stage private investors, all they want to do generally is exit on the IPO. That's what they're thinking. They're thinking, we've taken this fucking thing as far as possible as a private company. We either don't have the demand for another private round of investment, or our capital needs have exceeded what we're able to get on the private market, which can be a case in a situation where a company is burning capital and is still not profitable. And many IPOs are still not profitable. People don't even know that. People think you have to be a profitable company to be public. Abso-fucking-lutely not. The public market is stocked with companies that don't turn a profit, don't generate cash. I mean, let's start there. People don't even know that. The average mom and pop doesn't even know that. They look at a company like Tesla, they assume it's got to be profitable. Right? How does Elon Musk create a net worth of $22 billion if they're not profitable? Wait till they find out what the fuck's really going on, right? So maybe you get to a point where the company needs more capital and it can't get it from a private spot. Maybe you get to a point where you feel like you can't entice investors privately because the valuation has just reached a peak on the private market. What do? Well, you take shares and you offer them to the public. Right? And what does that look like? Once you have taken all of the prospectus documents and the financials and the metrics and you've squeezed all the fucking juice out of that lemon you can get. And I mean, when you go to write the pro formas and you go to issue guidance and you go to paint a picture for the market of what the future of your company is going to look like, you want to make that look as fucking good as humanly possible, as good as legally possible when you go to the public markets, right? Have people been doing illegal things, things on the border of illegality? I'm sure they have. Can I think of any recent specific examples off the top of my head? The answer is no, I can't. But you have to know that when a company is being pushed to go public, the people that are pushing it to go public, all they want to do is make it look as good as fucking humanly possible. And they're going to turn every lever possible and they're going to squeeze every last bit of juice out of that fucking orange that they can squeeze. And they're going to fucking gear every last metric that they can. And they're going to bring in lawyers and they're going to bring in investment bankers to define terms and redefine terms when they go to describe their business in the prospectus. Really, all companies do this on all their annual reports for the most part. But with a going public prospectus, you have to understand that everything in that prospectus has been scrutinized to the nth degree to make this company look as good as humanly possible to unwilling, unknowing retail market participants. The mom and pop, the guy that's out there with a Robinhood account right now with $1,000 in it that's thinking, maybe I should buy some Lyft shares because I drive for Lyft, or because I take Lyft every day, or because I've heard of it, you know, or because Carl Icahn's invested in it. Maybe I should invest in it. I mean, you don't see Carl Icahn out there buying the IPO, do you? Fuck no. He invested, you know, forever ago, right? He was a pre-IPO investor. And that's why Carl Icahn's getting fucking paid, because the valuation of the company now is a multiple of what it was when he invested in it. But you don't see him coming out and buying Lyft right now as a public company, right? With a fucking market cap of $20 billion or whatever it is. So the point of the matter is you have to be conscious of the fact that your entrance on an IPO is going to be another investor's exit. Granted, that's how it is anytime you invest, anytime you trade equity or any type of financial instrument or anything. Your sale, you know, is another person's purchase. But in this case, you have to be acutely aware of it. Now, why is this worth hemming and hawing over, and why is it such a big deal? Well, I'll fucking tell you why it's a big deal. And by the way, thank you for asking. Because when a company goes public, all right, not only do you have a roadshow where people that are pre-IPO investors go out and pimp this company, and that's basically what they're doing. They pimp the company, and it's carefully modeled and manipulated metrics to investment banks and to potential still pre-IPO investors. But when you go and you want to attach, you know, quote-unquote reputable names to the underwriters, you want to lure in a JP Morgan or a Goldman Sachs to underwrite it to lend some quote unquote credibility, right? I'm fucking winking as I'm saying this stuff. Once all that shit is done, It's time for the fucking pigs to hit the trough, right? And if you're a retail investor and you don't know what you're doing, I'm not calling you a pig. But what I am saying is you have to understand what's going on here, right? And this is something that personally, look, maybe you do. And maybe you're saying to me, hey, Chris, I get this shit. Why are you fucking explaining it? Because at one point I didn't get it. And that to me tells me that there may be other people out there that don't get it. And that's really how I base my content on for this podcast. If at some point I didn't get it or I was confused by what an IPO was and I just thought an IPO was a gimme, anytime you got one, if you could buy an IPO, you just bought it no matter what it was and it always went up. And that could go into a longer conversation about horseshit Keynesianism and modern monetary theory and how we're at the behest of propping up the equity markets. But that's not always the truth. And people need to understand that. For instance, as I was sitting down to do this podcast, I saw that Blue Apron CEO, one of the founders of Blue Apron had resigned, right? Blue Apron was a hyped up and talked about IPO, and its founder has resigned. Person's probably cashed out. The stock has fucking cratered. Absolutely cratered. And you look at some of these other IPOs. GoPro has fucking cratered since it IPO'd. Nick Woodman doesn't give a fuck. The CEO, he was selling shares, I think it's $60, $70, $80 a share. I can't remember. That motherfucker's on a yacht right now, all right, guzzling champagne and hanging out with Eastern European strippers. And the people that bought that IPO and were chasing it up at $70, $80, $90 a share when investment banks were out there trying to pimp it and saying it's a buy and it's, you know, it's not a camera company, it's a technology company. Motherfucker, it's a camera company, all right? That's why it's trading for whatever it's trading for now. Single digits, I think, the last time I looked at it. Let's just take a look just for fun so people can't say, you got your information wrong. You can't come out and tell people what to do. You can't get your fucking information wrong. $6.63, all right? So if you bought this anywhere in the double digits, you can officially go fuck yourself. That's basically what the underwriters of the stock are telling you. But when GoPro IPO'd, it was this big, oh, God, GoPro, it's a fucking life-changing, it's a technology company. It's a lifestyle, folks. You just don't understand, it's a lifestyle. I don't know, sure looks like they're making cameras, putting them in a box and selling them. Looks like a hardware company that's making cameras with no fucking moat whatsoever. You just don't understand. It's a technology company. Look at the pro formas, look at the estimates. This shit's trading for $6 right now, okay? How do you feel if you bought it at $60, $70, right? When Woodman was out there just fucking crushing the bid with his shares. If you don't think that's possible with Lyft, especially because Lyft is a money-losing company, right? So the onus is on the company to then turn around and generate a profit. If you don't think it's possible with them, then you got to rethink it. To think that these IPOs are all just gimmies and freebies and easy ways to make money without a doubt is a bad, bad way to think. It's like Spotify, right? Spotify did an IPO, I think, about a year ago, and it was all over the news media. Everybody was talking about the Spotify IPO. What happened? Spotify went up. They pumped it up to, I think, 200, 210, 220 or something, and now it's back down, I think. I don't know if it's below the offering price, but it's below the price that I think it first started trading at. I think it first started trading 150s. I think it's in the 140s now. So it's been a year. So if you bought the Spotify IPO, you're probably more than likely in the red. And Blue Apron, again, let's just pull up the Blue Apron chart just so nobody could tell me that I got the information wrong. Okay, Blue Apron is trading at, let's just see here. Actually, Blue Apron, when it first started trading on the public markets, was trading at about $9 a share, it looks like, okay? Where is it now? 96 cents. All right, thank you very much, folks. If you participated in buying this stock anywhere between the time that it opened on its first day of trading at around $9, and now, and I'm looking at a chart, it started trading in June of 2017 at about $9. And here we are today. Today's April 2nd, 2019. The stock's at 96 cents, okay? So that is a 90% loss if you bought it the day that it opened. And it's pretty much going to be a devastating loss no matter where you bought it. Because right now it's at all-time lows, and it doesn't even look like it's ever really gone up. There's a couple of small bounces, but for the most part, if you bought it anywhere prior to today, you are at a loss. It looks like it is trading at its lowest point possible. I don't know what its 52-week low is. Let me just see here. The 52-week low is 65 cents. Oh, so fucking congratulations. If you had the foresight to buy it at 65 cents, you made 50%. Holy shit. Unbelievable. I mean, what's the point though, right? Blue Apron probably rushed to the market to get their IPO done because there's a lot of other food delivery services that are out now. They didn't really have a moat. They were trendy for a while, just for a couple years leading up to the IPO. And then to me personally, it's my opinion, it feels like they rushed it because they knew, hey, we don't have that much longer left. And what do you do if you're a pre-IPO investor in Blue Apron and all of a sudden you start seeing Springly and you start seeing Eat Clean Bro and you start seeing all these food delivery services and Fresh Direct? They're not meal prep, but you kind of know, hey, I'm not really doing something totally different here. I'm not really doing something totally different just yet. It's a niche, and maybe we were one of the first adopters, but there's nothing preventing new participants into what we're doing. You say, fuck, we better get this thing out to the fucking public markets soon as possible so I can get my money back if I was one of the original investors. And now, if you were one of the dumb fucks on the public market that bought it at its ridiculous valuation that it IPO'd at, and let's just see, it's got about a $200 million market cap now, all right? So it must have IPO'd with a market cap nearing $2 billion, all right? So that's a valuation loss of something like between $1.5 and $2 billion. Probably about $1.8 or $1.5 billion in value has been lost from this company. So just think about that. The pre-IPO investors ramped this valuation of the company up to around $2 billion when it went public. People were saying this is a $2 billion company. And all those rounds of financing leading up to that, its valuation probably increased a little by little. It started as a $10 million, then maybe it went to a $100 million company, then maybe it went to a $500 million company, then maybe it went to a $1 billion company, and then all of a sudden starts to look like a fucking drunk, kind of wobbling down a hallway a little bit, starts to like, oh shit, and maybe you give it one more beer, you know, and that fucking drunk now at $1.5 billion and it can barely stand up. And right about the time before the drunk is about to just fall down the fucking stairs face first, like in one of those epic fail videos where you see a guy just clang right down the stairs, thump, 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 like just fucking using his head to break his fall on every stair. Right before that happens, they say, hey, we got to get this guy out of the house. We got to get him out to the public market, right? So you take this big, stupid, fat, drunken fucking mess of a company, and right before he's about to puke on himself and shit himself and fall down the stairs, you just open the front door and you release him to the public. And what does he do? He just barely wobbles off your property, and then he does all that stuff, and he keels over and he dies on the sidewalk, all right? That's exactly what happens in the case of a company with an overvalued valuation heading into being an IPO, right? It's the same thing. This thing's got a $2 billion valuation. You can't tell me that these original investors weren't thinking, fuck, we got to shovel this shit out to the public post haste and get somebody to take these fucking shares off our hands, because it's not going to be too much longer until the drunken giant winds up shitting himself, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what happened in that case. You bought it at 9, you're sitting on something worth 90 cents. Congratulations and have a nice Easter, ladies and gentlemen. And if you think that is impossible with Lyft, you're wrong. Could Lyft double over the next 6 months? Sure it could. Could Lyft turn out to be the best investment in stock market history? Sure it could. I don't think it will, but it's possible. So I'm not saying Lyft is a zero. I'm not saying go out and short Lyft. I'm not saying don't buy or own shares of Lyft. But what I'm saying is you have to be cognizant of the fact that when you're buying an IPO, you're not getting in early. You're buying somebody else's bag of shit. You're the next person that this shit is being passed on to, and you just have to be wary of that while you're doing your analysis of the company. You have to understand that. Because if you just close your eyes and you just buy IPOs, you're going to wind up in a situation like Blue Apron. You're going to wind up in a situation like GoPro. And folks, the insiders are cashing out generally when this shit happens too. So you have to understand it's not just investors that are cashing out. Oftentimes, it's company founders and company executives that use this opportunity to cash out too. But you would never fucking know any of this stuff if you turned on the television, okay, and you watch something like Jim Cramer a couple days ago, who's watching Lyft shares fall as they start to trade publicly, and he is bewildered. He's beside himself. He doesn't know what to think. Well, you know, it's at 75. You got to think it can't fall much further. It's at 72. You got to feel like a bid's going to come in at 72, he was saying the other day. I mean, he was like beside himself, right? He's on CNBC trying to justify the fact that the company's stock that is been issued and is now public at what is the highest pumped up valuation possible, and then on the upper range of that valuation, is falling. What he should have done is he should have went on TV and said, motherfuckers, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised when you stretch a company's valuation as much as you possibly can to get the most value out of it on the public market. It shouldn't be that big of a surprise that it's falling a little bit here. Maybe it needs to come down 20%, 30%, 50%. Who the fuck knows? Maybe you should wait to buy it. But instead, to make excuses every $2-3 every time it comes down, like, oh, I can't believe it's down here. Well, certainly it's not going to hit 72. I mean, you got to think, if it goes below the offering price, you got to buy it. If it goes under 70, there's no way it's going to go under 70. It's like, meanwhile, the fucking chart of the stock in the background is just crashing, right? So it's trading 68s now. It's looked like garbage. It's traded like shit for the last couple of days. Set the price at 72. It's now below its IPO price. Gapped up the morning it traded to 85. If you bought it there, you're already toast to the tune of 15%, 20%. So you have to know, these IPOs aren't your chance to get in early. They're a chance for the people that actually got in early to get out. And all I'm asking is that you start looking at things that way and consider the other side of the coin, because you're not going to hear it from the media. And when the retail investor, the guy that comes home and turns on the TV or opens up the paper, when they see Lyft IPO, Lyft's at 85, and they don't know anything about equity valuation, so they don't know that valued the company at maybe 22 or 23 billion, and now it's at 20 billion or 18 billion. They don't know what that shit means. They see a stock that opened at 85 come down to 68. They think, wow, I'm buying this at a discount. You're not. They don't know how to discount cash flows and add up the sum of future earnings. And instead of the media giving these people a little bit of skepticism and trying to open their minds a little bit and trying to inform them on how to actually value an equity and why you don't have to go out and buy every last piece of horse shit hand over fist all the time, especially 11 years into a goddamn bull market with relatively record levels of debt now outstanding across the board and a Federal Reserve that couldn't fucking hit sand if it fell off a camel. With all of those things going on, nobody on the television thinks to say, hey, maybe you got to let this one come down 30%, 40%, 50%. It's pump, 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 pump. Because when the retail investor watches the TV and the TV's talking about the Lyft IPO and the stock's off 10%, and a familiar face is on there making excuses for why a money-losing company has come down in value on the public market after it's already been inflated as a pre-IPO company, they think to themselves, "Hey, I'm getting in early. I'm getting in at a discount." He said it's got a good balance sheet. That's what Jim Cramer said the other day. Lyft has a good balance sheet. It's like, who the fuck cares about the balance sheet? You can't argue that it's this incredible growth company that, you know, should be on this trajectory to profitability, and then start talking about the balance sheet. Nobody cares about the balance sheet. I mean, as long as they're not levered significantly, the story, right, should be about the future earnings. It should be about the future cash flow. You know, saying a company like this has a good balance sheet is like saying, hey, Bill, I think you should light those $100 bills on fire. Here's what I want you to do, Bill. Every morning you wake up, I want you to take your wallet out, and I want you to take a $100 bill. Then I want you to flush it down the toilet. And then I want you to take another one, and I want you to light it on fire. So every morning when you wake up, you're going to flush one $100 bill down the toilet, and the other one I want you to light on fire every single morning. 200 up in flames or down the shitter every single day. And when Bill turns around and says to you, well, that doesn't seem like a great way to kind of run my personal finances, you turn back to him and you say, hey, well, you got a wallet full of hundreds, huh? You got a wallet full of them. What's the problem? That's the argument he's making with they have a good balance sheet. Well, how much cash are they going to burn over the next quarter, 2 quarters, 4 quarters, 2 years? Can they be profitable consistently? Will they be profitable consistently? Will the overall macro trend hang, you know, hold up here? Will the market hold up here? Is this a great environment to IPO? We're going to see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the fucking thing doubles. I hope it does. I hope everybody that's long makes money. But if it doesn't, and even if it does, I don't want you to be able to say that you didn't hear the other side of the coin. Because for every buyer, there's a seller. and the buyer thinks they're getting a discount, and the seller thinks that they're selling at just the right price. So if you don't consider your counterparty's mindset as you enter into a transaction, especially buying something that's being IPO'd for the first time, then you're doing yourself a goddamn disservice. How do you like that shit, CNBC? Take it to the bank, ladies and gentlemen. I am out of here. Peace.